Welcome to the very first episode of Red, White, and Brews with Gru. I'm Greg Grugan, and this is my dream job. Sitting down, talking to good friends and interesting people with a cold brew in hand. Today, for this episode, I have one of my very best, Bill King. Bill is a columnist, businessman. He's a fellow at the Baker Institute. He's a grandfather. He's an Astro fan. He's a prolific writer, regular contributor to my show, Watch Your Point, and just a thrill to have you here for this first show, Bill.
Thanks. Honored to be the kickoff show.
All right, I'm going to get straight to it. What sticks in your craw? And I happen to know what sticks in your craw because I talk to you nearly every day. You are bugged by the fact that Americans, a huge swath of them, are cut out of the political process. Because they don't see the world through Democratic eyes or Republican eyes. And those two parties are increasingly run by zealots and extremists. What's your assessment?
Well, you've described it pretty well. The the political parties used to be a lot different than they are today. They had liberal and conservative wings, and they were, there's a place kind of for everybody. But as we've gone to the primary system, as the media's become a lot more politicized and polarized, social media made its worse, and then we gerrymandered the world. Now the only people that can get elected are people that win primary elections. And it's getting worse with the current round of new gerrymandering that's going on. And so for, about a decade now, something like about 40% of the American people, it's actually a little bit higher now, don't identify with either one of these political parties anymore. And those 40%, which I'm in, all we can do is go in November and pick from the lesser of two evils. And, a lot of us are kind of getting sick of being restricted to that choice.
Sounds like a duopoly.
It is a duopoly.
And can you crack it?
It's possible, but it's very difficult. They've rigged the game, so it makes it very difficult for other parties to get on the ballot. It would take a lot of money to do it. It would take a sustained effort to do it. We've only had really one successful third party in the history of the country, and that was the Republicans in 1850. At that time, the Democrats and the Whigs were the two principal parties, and there was a big swath of the country that felt like neither one of them were serious enough about getting rid of slavery. And so a new party started up, a bunch of principled men, mostly some women, got together and said, we want a party that is committed to abolishing slavery. And that was the birth of the Republican Party in the 1850s. And it took them about a decade before Abraham Lincoln was elected as president. But it changed the political landscape of the country.
What bugs me is the fact that to win a primary, you have to basically pander to a very radicalized base. We see that in Texas. It's the hard right wing of the Republican Party. And here in Harris County, you've got to pander to the hard left wing of the Democratic Party. You can't be a moderate Democrat or you'll be excommunicated.
Well, we've seen that over and over. John Whitmire is probably the best example of a very pragmatic, person trying to lead a city that has a lot of problems. And he just totally gets grief all the time about these fringe issues that have very little to do about running a city.
Wow. I mean, I know that at one point you were part of a third party movement. That has its own difficulties, doesn't it?
Well, the biggest difficulty is trying to get it started. Like I said, the two parties have conspired. The one thing they agree on is they don't want any more competition. And so they have conspired to make it as difficult as possible for somebody else to get on the ballot. And you've got to get on the ballot to have a chance to compete. But I don't know. There comes a moment like happened in the 1850s where the country has just had enough. And you look at the polling now, and people are getting more and more frustrated with these two parties. There's all this raft of polling here recently that said the Democratic Party was at all-time lows. Nobody mentioned the fact the Republican Party is also at all-time lows. I mean, it's literally about half the country now doesn't really like either one of these political parties.
So, Bill, do we need a white knight like a Bloomberg or an Elon Musk to show up and be willing to spend, you know, a couple billion dollars to get this thing rolling?
So, historically, again, and, you know, whether history is a good teacher or not, you never know. But historically, when a new party has been organized around a particular personality or individual, it's failed. You got the Bull Moose Party. You've got Ross Perot's Reform Party. You've got George Wallace's American Independent Party. I mean, every time we've tried to organize, or a party's been tried to be organized around an individual, it hasn't succeeded, because after the election's over, if they don't get elected, then it all falls apart. The only time it's been done successfully was when it was done on a grassroots level by the Republicans in the 1850s, and it was organized around a principle. The principle of, we're going to abolish slavery.
Look, I scan the democratic nations, industrialized nations, first world nations across the globe. Are we the only country with just two parties?
Correct. We're the only party with two functioning, what they call functioning parties. We've got these other parties, but they're not relevant. In every other country, there's multiple parties. And multiple parties doesn't guarantee your success. In some places, it hadn't worked very well. Italy would be a pretty good example. But in other places, it's worked spectacularly. And the bulk of the evidence, I think, indicates is that you're better served by having more voices represented other than just two. Voter turnout in almost all those countries is higher than it is here. People's confidence in their government is higher than it is here. And, you know, they tend to, suppose like a Germany and New Zealand, Australia, you know, tend to have policies that, you know, make sense.
Look, a perfect example of, you know, allowing folks who are zealots to take control of a party, we are seeing in the Senate race right now. You have John Cornyn, a multi-term incumbent, highly respected on both sides of the aisle in Washington, D.C., and yet he is in danger of losing that seat to Ken Paxton, who has been embraced by the far right of the Texas Republican Party. How does that happen?
I don't know. I mean, and Paxton is a complete empty suit, both intellectually, morally, any way you want to look at it. And it is just inconceivable to me. But this is tribal. And so he gets out there and yells the loudest, and, you know, I sued the Biden administration more than anybody else has ever sued him. Oh, great, that's our guy, let's go. You know, I don't want somebody to fight for me. I want somebody to go get something done. And we've got too many problems in this country. The national debt is just going to drown us. You know, Social Security is in jeopardy of having to cut benefits. We've got a health care crisis going on in the United States, an obesity epidemic, a diabetes epidemic, a dementia epidemic. We got a mental health issue. All of these are serious problems that need serious solutions. And this, you know, I'm going to go sue because they're letting, you know, biological men compete in women's sports. Well, I think that's pretty stupid, but it's not the most important issue we've got.
Damn, I think I need a drink, Bill. All right. Look, you know, on the flip side, we have Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo, who the most recent polls show is the least popular elected official in Harris County for a lot of reasons. And yet she is perceived positively by 60% of the Democratic base, which gives her a leg up if she decides to run again for a third term against, you know, two challengers that we know of, and despite what we both believe is a horrific record of incompetence.
Yeah, when I talk to people about Harris County, I say, well, just tell me one thing in Harris County that's better than it was 4 years ago or 6 years ago or 8 years. I mean, just tell me one thing that's working better than it was. And flood control, I think, is the one that's really sort of the marquee issue for how incompetent the county has been over the last few years. Now, we organize counties to fix flooding, to fix streets, to deal with mobility, to run a criminal justice system, and not a whole lot else, run a hospital district. And she has us off in everything in the world, from UBI to early childhood. I mean, how in the world would the county be competent to run early childhood? I mean, if you're going to have those kind of programs, the schools ought to be running those, not the county. But this is all about her ideology. And in some ways, I've always thought she is auditioning for the next political job, which we're hearing rumors may be the Garcia's congressional seat if she decides not to run again.
You know, I talk to you almost every day, and you exhaust me by the amount of number of projects you take on. But you've done a deep dive into demographics and into the myth of population growth. I mean, I can give you 30 clips of local politicians talking about how Harris County and the city of Houston keeps growing, and you've discovered it's just not true.
Yeah, well, it's nuanced. There's been this mantra about overpopulation for most of my adult life. When I was a freshman in college, I read Paul Ehrlich's Population Bomb. It scared us all to death. You know, we all went out and joined zero population, promising not to have more than two kids and all this stuff. And even at that time, the population, the birth rates were falling and falling dramatically. And they've been doing that now for 50 years. But somehow the public's perception hasn't caught up with what's actually going on. The only thing that's been propping up U.S. population or local populations has been international immigration. And Harris County is particularly stark. Over the last decade, we've had 200,000 people more move out of Harris County to someplace else in the United States than have moved from the United States into Harris County. Now, the population has still gone up during that time, but it's been exclusively due to people coming here from other countries, primarily from Latin America. This is kind of the first big city as you move north through the country. And so a lot of them stop here and try to find work, figure out where they're going to go from here. If it weren't for that, Harris County would have been losing population for the last decade.
Bill, is that an anomaly? I mean, or is it a trend and a long-term trend we need to start planning for?
No, this is happening all over the world.
Wow.
There are 63 countries today that have about a quarter of the world's population where the population is already declining. It's already going down. China, Germany, Italy, Japan. China is projected to lose half of its population by the end of this century. And we don't have any analogs for a country losing that much population. And the only thing that keeps America propped up is that we historically have taken in about 1 million immigrants from around the world. The great advantage that we have is everybody in the world still wants to come here. Now, we do obviously a terrible job of how we regulate that and decide who's coming in and all that. That policy's hopelessly broken. But it is an advantage to us that we could make it to our advantage if we had a rational immigration policy.
Sounds to me like maybe we need to keep some of these folks who came here without documentation, but seem to be minding their P's and Q's and contributing to the economy.
Yeah, here are the vast majority. We force them into the shadows. We force them into the underground economy because we won't give them the legal permission to work. And all that's just a terrible mistake. Now, look, there are plenty of knuckleheads that came in the country, especially in the last 4 years, that need to be kicked the hell out. I totally agree with the president about that. But that's a very small number of people. And they're going to be the hardest to find, by the way. And because they're so hard to find, that's why you now see them running around, these big, burly, masked guys in full, grabbing a grandmother off the street or something. It's just so unseemly. I can't believe it. So we got to get the immigration policy right. But the idea that we can do without these people altogether is a huge mistake.
Quickly, I mean, I thought that the ag associations, the meat packers, the hospitality industry would all go back channel and talk to Trump and say, like, hey, we can't function without these people. You think that's happening?
Well, there's some indications maybe there is. He was down, touting the alligator Alcatraz or whatever that is down there in the Everglades. And he said something about, you know, maybe we ought to rethink the agriculture and hospitality. Wonder where he came up with that. And like hotels, maybe, and restaurants. But, you know, here's the ironic thing. He could absolutely be the president that goes to China on immigration, like Nixon did. He could be the guy that solves the problem.
Hold that thought. We're going to go to break. Red, White, and Bruce. We'll be right back.
I pledge allegiance to the red, white, and blue.
Yeah, welcome back to Red, White, and Bruce with Gru. I'm here with my good friend Bill King, a columnist, attorney, author, just incredible friend of mine. You know, we met on the campaign trail.
Now, you interviewed me. That's how we met.
Yeah. How does this happen? It's crazy, man. Mm-hmm. Anyway, hey, I want to tap into your encyclopedic knowledge and a little bit of a Cassandra to some degree. The city of Houston's financial shape is not good. And I'd like you to speak truth to our viewers.
Well, it's terrible. There's several problems here. One is that for decades, we built stuff on the cheap in Houston. Our flood control, our wastewater systems, our water systems, our power systems, and that's all catching up with us now. And so we need to be spending a bunch of money, you know, updating all that. At the same time, we've got real revenue problems. The city really made three critical errors, in my opinion. The biggest mistake it made was back in the 1970s, it decided to devote half of its sales tax to transit. And so for the last, you know, 50 years, we've been giving half of our sales tax revenue to Metro. If we had all that money, we wouldn't have any financial problems. You'd be paving the streets in gold. And transit was never going to work in Houston because we didn't have the population density to support it. It's an ideological thing. People believe in it, and a lot of people believe in it, but I'm just telling you, the math is not there for us to have a big, robust transit system. And we've thrown money at it, we've thrown money at it, we've thrown money at it. And today, we're carrying 25% fewer riders than we were 25 years ago. So that was the biggest problem. The second problem is we continue to offer these very luxurious defined benefit pension plans to our employees long after almost everybody else had abandoned that model.
We need to go to 401ks.
Yeah. This
for
is
for new hires anyway, right?
At least new hires, yes. And we spend about $600 million a year funding those plans today. And then the third thing is we set up these ridiculous TERSs, which were supposed to help, you know, poor neighborhoods, and instead they fit rich neighborhoods, and we're spending about $250 million a year on those.
We're going to do a whole show on that grift. All right, Red, White, and Bruce will be right back.
I pledge allegiance to the red, white, and blue.
Yeah, welcome back to Red, White, and Bruce. I'm on number two with my good buddy, Bill King. Hey, Bill, one thing that we've shared is this incredible journey with what you're beautiful wife Cheryl calls the Sandlot team that has had to play a huge role with the Houston Astros.
Yeah,
thoughts?
It's just been unbelievable. 18 players on the injured reserve list. I've never even heard of a number that high before. And somehow they keep putting it together. Yesterday they're a game and a half in first. And I credit the management and the ownership. Jim Crane's got to be the best, you know, baseball franchise owner there's ever been in the history of the game. They just somehow keep putting it together and finding these incredible players. I mean, they go down to the Dominican Republic and they find Ronaldo Blanco working in a car wash, signing for $5,000, and 2 years later he's pitching a no-hitter in the majors.
And we got Carlos Correa back. Yeah. It's storybook. You know, it's unbelievable. Hey, buddy, thanks for being part of history.
You bet.
I know you'll be back. And thank you for joining us for this first episode of Red, White, and Bruce with Gru. Hope you'll come back.
I pledge allegiance.